Welcome to Inside Windows Phone. This week we are here again with our big friend Rob Tiffany.
Hey little guy, how you doing? It's great to be back.
Thank you.
Did you have a nice time over the holidays?
I had an awesome time.
Excellent.
Yeah. Great weather, nice rain,
yeah.
No snow.
I know. Yeah. It's great weather for writing code though, isn't it?
We are blessed in Seattle. It's always coding time.
We are so blessed.
Yes.
By the Seahawks. Anyway.
I heard about them.
You've heard about them?
Today's topic, NoSQL.
We're not going to talk about SQL?
No, we're going to not.
No?
Why are we talking about NoSQL?
Well, it's an option. When you're doing enterprise mobile development, one of the things is you need offline data storage, right? You can't count on the wireless data network to always be there, and so you can't count on always being connected, and so you've got to be able to prefetch data, sync data, whatever, take it offline so that users, your customers, can keep working, even if they drive through a tunnel or through a bridge or whatever. And so you got to have a way to take that offline. Now, if it's tiny amounts of data, maybe it doesn't matter. They can save a file as a text file or XML. But as you start to get larger and larger data stores, you might want something that's more familiar to someone who works with databases, perhaps.
Okay, so for the people who may not familiar with NoSQL, give me the highlights, how you would approach this, and we can talk about the why compared to other things a little bit later. But
absolutely. So NoSQL, or some people say it's not only SQL, it's a trend that started several years ago with a lot of cloud-based companies and companies trying to do really high-scale server-based offerings where they felt like their relational database was running out of gas. And it didn't matter who's relational. I'm not going to pick on anyone. At some point, when you're doing internet scale with millions or hundreds of millions of people, like some of these social networks we might use, there's no relational database on the planet that can handle it. So there's lots of them. And so NoSQL got rid of a lot of features of relational databases that we've come to love, but in order to get better speed and better scalability. So they're simpler, they're easy to work with.
But with a trade-off.
But there is absolutely a trade-off, absolutely. Like referential integrity.
Well, would be interesting to have sometimes.
Consistency. A lot of people like the term eventual consistency when they're thinking of NoSQL databases on servers, you know.
You see the trend happening on when using databases as well, right? So
absolutely. Yeah.
Assume there is no consistency.
Right.
And architect for that, yeah.
Right, absolutely. So you probably wouldn't do that if you were building a banking ATM machine, or you know, where you had to have a real transaction and actually know that the money actually went where it's supposed to go. You may not want to use NoSQL there. But for lots of other things, it might be just fine. And so so today what we want to do is we want to take some of those concepts of NoSQL, and we'll cover some of those, and bring it down to the mobile device, to a Windows phone, to a Windows tablet, a laptop, and see how you can use that to give you another option for data storage.
All right.
Yeah. So some NoSQL systems kind of might use key-value pairs with a key, and they could, some are called document databases. They use JSON documents. I know document sounds kind of weird. We're not putting a Word document in there, but you might put JSON in there. There's a lot of different flavors of NoSQL, and lots of different names, lots of open source projects. What we'll talk about that I found is pretty easy to do, and it's using just the code that you have on Windows Phone or big Windows. It's just .NET code, basically.
Okay, yeah.
And so it's not, you know, we've got lots of other options. We've been, you know, over a decade, we've been using SQL CE on our mobile devices. We've talked more and more about using SQLite, and we've got great SQLite support on Windows phones and tablets, and so that's a great solution
as well.
Yeah,
we're going to talk about it in the future in one of these episodes
as
well. Yep.
Absolutely, absolutely. Somewhere in between needing maybe the horsepower of a big relational database like SQLite is your needs might, you might want that feeling of relational kind of offline things, being able to have multiple tables, being able to query them in a way that seems familiar to someone who works with databases. But maybe you're not needing to store tens of thousands of records locally. And so NoSQL is a great option. So what I want to do today is I just want to walk through how you can do this yourself, because it's not rocket science. It's just knowing how to do it. And so I'm going to think of this in terms as just a collection of tables. I mean, that's all a database is. So we're not going to build a database per se. We're going to just build a bunch of tables, but you get to query those tables as if you were querying SQL tables. And the reason for this is because of this great technology we built quite a few years ago called Language Integrated Query, or LINQ. Not to be confused with the other LINQ that we do conference calls on, or presence, or things like that. So LINQ allows you to query collections of objects.
Yes.
A lot of people think LINQ to SQL, and they've used that with SQL CE on our phone.
Yeah, I love it.
Absolutely. But you can actually query a collection of objects in memory using the same kind of construct, SQL-like syntax, you know. So the first thing you do when you're building a database is you kind of create the schema for the table. You know, I'm building a customer table, maybe customer ID, first name, last name, blah, 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 products tables, things like that. So when you create a schema in real SQL with real databases, you know, there's this data definition language, DDL stuff, and used to create the table and everything, and indexes and primary keys, stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's real simple when we're doing our thing. You're just going to create a class. You're just going to create a class. So for customers, for instance, you'll create a customer class that's public, and its properties, you know, or fields, you know, with getters and setters would be something like customer ID, first name, last name, things like that. So for every table you want, just create a class, a product class, a borders class, things like that. So then the next thing you need to do is, okay, if one class turns into an object is basically a row in my table when I'm thinking relationally,
yeah.
And the properties are columns. So now I need to have a bunch of those things because I'm going to have a bunch of rows. So the next thing we're going to turn to is, who remembers generics? A long time ago, when we back in, what was it, .NET 2.0, when we added generics and we had the idea of doing generic lists so you can have strongly typed objects instead of always using array lists. We're going to create a generic list to kind of instantiate each of those tables. So let's just, for sake of this talk here, we'll say we'll have a customer, product, and order table. So we've created those classes. Now we need to instantiate those. And so what we're going to do is we're going to create generic lists for each of those. So it's a new list of type. Can you see those brackets?
Yeah,
those little triangle things. Of type customer, or of product, or order. Bring those alive so that we can then do something with them. The next thing you want to do is, I want to keep them in memory, because I want high-speed in-memory access using my LINQ queries. So what I want to do is I need to use static classes or a singleton to ensure that I'm not having to instantiate the whole list when I'm on different forms or screens in my solution. So I'm going to keep that. I'm going to have one instance of all those in memory all the time where I can query. So I've got that singleton, the static classes like that. And so now I'm in memory, and now the next thing I need to do is I got to do CRUD operations.
Ooh, sounds SQL-y like.
It does seem SQL. So create, read, update, and delete. Of course, no one ever says that. They say things like select, insert, update, delete, stuff like that. So, you know, because obviously the test of what I'm talking about is you've got to be able to do CRUD operations or it's of no use. The other test is I got to be able to save it offline. Because it's great to have this in-memory collection of objects that I can query, but if I can't serialize that data offline.
Exactly. So far, it sounds just like regular programming without the storage. So
absolutely.
How do we do that?
Absolutely. So there's some great ways to you can take a generic list and you can serialize it as JSON, as XML, depending on the platform you're on, a binary native format, and so you know. But JSON and XML are real easy to do. And so that's the great thing, is you can take that in-memory collection of objects and have it create a method. And I've definitely got some code on my blog, and I think we'll have a place we'll put out some code where you can see examples of how to do this, where you can take that in-memory collection, serialize it as JSON to the local flash storage, your isolated storage area, on whatever platform, whatever Microsoft platform you're using. This is just pure .NET code.
So being devil's advocate now,
yes.
Right? So what I hear when you talk to people, of developers, and there are people too, about the advantages of NoSQL is, well, you don't have to worry about schemas and all that stuff that's holding me back when I'm doing regular database stuff. But you still worry about schemas, right? It might be in your head, or it might be in your class definition instead of in a schema definition in your database. So for example, when I do an update on my app, and I think adding a property is pretty simple, but maybe changing relationships or changing field types.
Yeah.
How do you handle that? Because you have this serialized stuff, binary or whatever it is, somewhere in probably isolated storage.
Right.
You're updating your app with some new, well, it's not called a schema because we don't have one, right? But a new class definition, maybe.
Yeah.
How do I read that? So I guess still solving the same problems, I guess, but in a different way?
I think if you wanted to be able to do it that way, you might use something like an array list or something a little more loosely typed to do that. Because clearly, even though we're talking about NoSQL, what I'm talking about ultimately is strongly typed, since we're using, because you're right, we've created those classes. You would have to do versions. You would create a new customer class, or you would add in the new method, I mean the property, the field on there to add it, and not breaking the old stuff and being able to add it to the new stuff. Obviously it's a little different, because you're right, you're thinking about DDL and when you're on a big database and doing alter table and changing things like that. Obviously that's a big deal. And so you're right, we're not doing this kind of schemaless, loosely binding thing. We're doing strongly typed, so it's a lot closer to what people expect when they're working with a real database. Which is great though, because the benefits of that is performance. You're not doing a lot of casting. You get IntelliSense, which is all good. And so if I think about some CRUD operations, so we've talked about being able to serialize that. Like I said, we'll have the code out there. So you need to be able to save that collection of all your different tables. You need to be able to load them back up into memory. And so the scenario here would be, I'm going to query, you know, a web service I've created. So I'm using the web API, for instance, and I've got a REST service returning a collection of JSON objects because I queried the customer table. The great thing about this is you're going to use it in the format of the data that you're pulling down from the server anyway. So you're not having to change things. In fact, your device, you know, when you're using the HTTP client, you know, your portable class library, to pull that data down, you can actually pull that data down and immediately serialize it straight to the disk, then open it. You know, kind of think, I like to think a lot like a message queue.
You know,
ensure the integrity of things are there. So you save it down there, you open the collection in memory, you don't have to call it again, you know, you can then close the app, you could reboot your device even, and have it still there, you can rehydrate it, not have to call. So that's the whole important thing about being offline. Then it's just create, read, update, and delete. So the first thing we need to do is we need to fill that collection with data. And so that's where we're going to add new classes. So for a customer class, you would just do a new customer and hydrate it, fill it with data, you know. Set the ID, set the first name, the last name, and maybe do a few of those, and you'll add those to that in-memory collection. And it's real simple, because on that, the name of the collection, if it's customer collection, it literally just has a dot add, and you keep adding those classes in, and they'll fill it in, and then you save that. You know, a database, if you think about a database, in the background, it's flushing from time to time. I know with SQL CE, I think it had a default of however many seconds, maybe 60 seconds, maybe it was less, maybe 10, that would auto-flush. You can do that manually in your code. You know, you can do your add of your objects that you've hydrated, and then you can then call those simple save method, and it'll flush those changes to the serialized version of that table, because to have that integrity, while we're not going to build something with full ACID support like a industrial relational database, we're going to have some of that. So we're going to have that durability, the D in ACID, right? And so and luckily we're not necessarily building a multi-user database here. We're building an offline database for one person.
Single user, yeah.
Just a single user, so that a lot of the complexity doesn't have to be there. So we get how to add things in. That's simple enough. What about updating? I've got some data in there, but I want to change some of the properties in there. Well, luckily we can use link for that. So you use a link query with a where clause that can iterate through there and update one or more of the objects. So you can update one, you can update many, you can update the whole collection if you want to. So I want to change the first name from Matthias to Rob, or the last name to Jones or Smith or whatever, things like that. So you get to use link to do that. We'll have examples out there on the site as well. Delete is similar. On the generic list, there's a method called remove all. And inside the parentheses for that, is you get to put some other link code in there as well. And so that can determine, it's kind of like your where clause for removing things. And so it'll remove just the items you want to. And so the last but not least, obviously, is being able to select data. And so that's actually the easiest stuff with link. If you want to select all of it, you don't even have to use link. You can just iterate through the collection and put it out there. You can data bind it to like a long list selector or something like that. Keep in mind too, a generic list can work semi-interchangeably with things like observable collections.
Yep.
You know, I'm definitely not here to talk about MVVM or anything like that, but you can absolutely do that and bind those things directly if you want to, or you can pull a collection back in memory and do something else. But the selects, you know, you've got, go online, on MSDN, with the whole section on link, and it talks about all the different clauses that link does that mimics things that we use in SQL, and so you can do that, and you can do joins.
I'm terrible at link. I can't even type it from my head. I need to have MSDN or something else.
I'm right there with you. I'm right there with you.
Once you get it, then it's really, really neatly nice, small lines of code. Yeah.
I don't remember any of it either. I'm the same way. There's just an app called the
LinkPad. So looking back at it, it's like we have like an in-memory class collection, maybe some relation between them, like how you do code.
Yes.
And you assume that everything is in memory.
Right.
You can serialize it. You can even dehydrate it by deserializing it once if you
want. Absolutely.
You can add and remove records as normally do. So the trick is mostly maybe in the resume or in the suspend mode of your app.
Yes.
Serialize, deserialize, and go with that.
That's a perfect time to do it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And of course, when it's a collection of things, another easy way to delete everything is just call .clear.
Yes.
And it just wipes everything out and gets out of memory. So you can, as you do each operation, you can end each operation with a save method, which is kind of like flushing, kind of like auto-commit, huh? You know, or you can, if you don't want to, if you're doing a lot of I/O, you can do tricks that we do in relational database, like when you're doing lots of inserts and you want to save, bash up all those inserts and then do the flush all at one time.
But it depends on how much memory or how much stuff you have in memory.
Absolutely.
So to close off a little bit about when would you use this scenario or when not? So obviously having all this stuff in memory will take up memory.
Yes.
On lower memory devices, you might have a limit in how much you can have in memory because we have a smaller footprint.
Good point.
So when do we decide not to use this and switch to a database like SQL, SQLite?
You know what? I hate to use the word depends, but you need a test.
You sound like a consultant.
I sound like a consultant, don't I? Yeah. Yes. Yes. It definitely depends. You need a measure, which is a good thing you should do on any software project anyway, is always be measuring. So measure the memory. See how much memory you're using. Test it. Have an idea of, on average, usage for your app with all the different, you might have 3 tables, but you might have 20 tables. Determine how big are those tables going to be. You know, am I just going to have 10 or 20 objects or a few hundred? And then measure how much memory is being used and make your decisions based on that versus, and then, because you're right. Not only do you have to worry about a low memory device and how much memory you can use, but you want to be a good citizen with the other apps and the rest of the device too and not try to monopolize everything. Absolutely do lots of measuring. And you're right, look at, am I on a 512 device, a 1 gig device? I know we even have some 2 gig devices now. And so absolutely measure. But you should get great performance because it's all happening in memory. Lots of people, when they're using relational databases anyway, are already doing some kind of object relational mapper or doing it themselves. Like they'll use RealSQL, ADO.net. What's that? Entity framework. And they're pulling stuff from the database off disk into in-memory objects, and then they're using their application with the in-memory objects for performance reasons anyway. This is kind of like a, hey, I'm just going to beat you to the punch on that, and I'm keeping everything in memory. And so you can bind directly to those if you want to, and then you've got a simple flushing mechanism back to disk. I don't really want to compare it to Hekaton to SQL 2014, the memory optimized tables we have there, but it's kind of like that. Yes, I've been knee deep in SQL 2014 memory optimized tables lately to update our MEEP stuff because I'm a big fan of in-memory.
Yes.
If everything can stay in RAM, things are getting fast and more scalable. So if you think about that, the way our in-memory tables work in SQL 2014, they have different options of durability, but there's a durable backing store, a file stream object, and then you've got your, you create the database a little bit differently than we do normally, and they stay in memory, but there's a background thread flushing those changes, but you have the options to say, maybe do delayed flushing, or don't flush at all. Maybe I want to have a data something for transient stuff, and I just want to keep the schema, and if the database crashes or when it restarts, I'll rebuild just the schema but lose the data. It depends on your options.
Yep.
But we're doing the same thing. RAM, and then we'll just do background flushing. And that's something to think about. You'll have the tools to do whatever you want. If you don't want to flush each time, you could create your own background worker role, you know, background thread that's automatically flushing behind the scenes at a certain interval anyway.
You can make it as exciting as you want.
Exactly. Yeah. It's all exciting because it's code.
It is.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds a really nice option to discover. We will make sure that in this blog post, we will add all the different resources for you to start looking into this. And thanks again for your time.
Yeah, my pleasure.
See you next time.
All right. Bye-bye.